The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Hart Franklin from ISO on Movies, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm your podcast pal and humble host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 175. Man, it feels good to be back on the airwaves. I know I took last week off because of Thanksgiving, and I dropped the double episode on the 15th of November, and I hope that you enjoyed those episodes, and I hope that you enjoyed your Thanksgiving. Now, mine was okay. It was kind of low-key, which is not a bad thing, you know? You get so busy that sometimes you just need a little low-key spell there in your schedule to kind of make you, you know, appreciate it. But I didn't do anything really spectacular. I spent some time with some friends and some family out in eastern Ohio. I did not travel back to Rhode Island, as I know probably some people are thinking, why didn't you, John? Just to be honest with you, by the time that I get up there, I get literally maybe a day or two with the family up there, and then I have to turn around and come right back. So it's kind of really not worth it, but I'll be heading up there for Christmas time and spend an extended amount of time up there with the folks. Nonetheless, I'm glad to be back here. But before I talk about who's coming on this episode, or who's going to appear on this episode, I should say, I would like to talk about one small thing that happened over Thanksgiving. And I'm going to be 100% honest. I saw this on Twitter, and I wanted to respond, but I just couldn't. I didn't know how to express myself. And I don't know, maybe that makes no sense to people out there listening, but what I wanted to say, I just couldn't quite figure out a way to say it on Twitter. So I'm going to say it here on the PVD Cast. News broke that Magnum CK was going to call it a career this past weekend due to some injuries. From what he had tweeted out was that he's had an ongoing issue with his L3 and L4 vertebrae in his back. It's caused chronic pain. It's caused him to have, I guess you could say, some quality of life issues, if you want to call it that. And so he decided that this past weekend, while up in Cleveland at AIW, that this would be it. This would be the last match for Magnum CK. And I know what I'm going to say sounds very cliche, but CK was one of the nicest guys that I have met in this industry. And though I only worked with him a few times in NOW, I got to say he was always so nice and just so genuinely pleasant to be around. You know, I got the pleasure to call a couple of his matches while at the commentary table. And, you know, it just kind of sucks that that's, you know, this injury, this nagging injury, I should say, is what's causing him to call it quits. But nonetheless, man, I wanted to say, Magnum CK, thank you, man, for all you've done over the many, many years of entertaining all the people around Ohio with your work in the ring. And hey, man, you know, best of luck to you, man. And maybe, you know what, I'll throw it out here. I'm just gonna throw it out here. If you want to come on the PVD Cast, Magnum, anytime, you just let me know, man. We can come on, we'll talk about your career, dude, and do, you know, like a retrospective. That's the word I was looking for you, man. So just hit me up, let me know. But let's talk about my guest on episode 175 of the PVD Cast. I'm going to be joined by Steph Grieger. She's a local filmmaker and screenwriter, and she is currently working on a project called The Third Period. It's a hockey movie, and there you go. You know automatically those are two of my favorite things. But it's a hockey movie about a hockey player who has been injured and who's trying to come back from injury and try to make it back to the big leagues. We talk all about how the project started, the status of it right now, what the future holds for it and everything. And to be honest, it's just a fun interview. So I appreciate the fact that Steph met me a couple weeks ago. We recorded the episode, and I'm going to drop it on you here right after I let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Audible. That's right. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVDcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. I mean, they have lots of books. As I just said, 180,000 titles. So, I mean, man, you're going to find something. I guarantee it. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Again, that's audibletrial.com/PVDcast to get your hands on a free audiobook. And now I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'm going to be back here talking to Steph Grieger about her film project, The Third Period. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I am sitting down today with Steph Grieger. Steph, how are you?
I'm good. I'm great. Thank you. It's cold.
It is cold. It's freezing. I think winter is finally here.
Finally. In Central Ohio. Yes, it's made its appearance. And
it has.
With a vengeance, it has shown up.
Well, with a vengeance, you make it sound like there's 7 feet of snow out there.
I mean, you know, the snow hasn't appeared yet, but the temperature drop certainly is offensive, I think. It's very Central Ohio for it to go from like, you know, a lovely 50 or 60 to like 20.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
But you are a Central Ohio screenwriter and filmmaker.
I am.
So we want to talk a little bit about some of your projects that you got going on. And you know what? Let's just jump right into the main event, if you will, so to speak.
Let's do it. That's very wrestling-like. The main event. Yeah. Yes.
Welcome to the PVD
cast. Exactly.
So you have a film called The Third Period,
which
is kind of an offshoot, I guess you could say, from a short film that you did called Olski. So I guess talking about one is also kind of talking about the other, so to speak.
Yes. And I think people say that all the time. They think that The Third Period came out of Olski, but it's actually in the reverse.
Really?
Yeah, it is. So I wrote the script actually about 5 years ago, or at least I started writing it 5 years ago. And I was at the time covering the Blue Jackets. I did that with Fox Sports Ohio and through the other paper for about five seasons, and started to write the script. And when I finally was completed with the script and I'd had some folks had looked at it, and I felt like I was comfortable with it, I started to look around, how do you sell this? So in the movie industry, if you have a script that you want to sell that you wrote, it's called a spec script. You know, nobody asked you to write it. It just came from you and you wrote it. That's a spec script. So the idea is you want to sell it. And I did a lot of research on, okay, well, how do I sell this? And there's lots of like places where you can go to try and sell your script. But by far, most of the interviews that I saw from other filmmakers and a lot of their pathways were that they made a proof of concept or a short film based on their feature length script. And then they utilized that proof of concept video, that short film, to then sell the actual script.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it started.
Mm-hmm.
So I made Olski as a way to sell my spec script. But once I made Olski, I very quickly ascertained that that's pretty much all I wanted to do with the rest of my life at that point. I mean, I was like, this is it. No, I have to make this film myself because I love being behind the camera. I love the visual storytelling. This is amazing. And I had been doing it as a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, as a journalist, you're doing a lot of nonfiction.
Right,
and it's,
right.
You know, it's real world stuff. It's like, not reality TV, but it's that, you know,
yeah.
format. And so fiction is a little bit, narrative is a little bit different. And so once I did it, I was like, no, I'll just do it the same. So Olski was the proof of concept for the script, The Third Period.
Okay.
Now we've moved into the phase of actually making The Third Period film.
Okay, can we go back for a quick second?
Let's go.
Is there a lot of lap over from your ideas with Olski to The Third Period?
So Olski is just sort of a conceptual representation of
okay.
The Third Period. It's okay. not the scenes that you see are scenes that are that are part of The Third Period,
mm-hmm.
but it's really Olski is just like conceptually sort of a mashup of a couple of different elements of
okay.
the script.
You got a quick synopsis of Olski?
Yeah, Olski is just Olski is an injured player who's battling back.
This is right after he has, you know, sort of left the psychologist. He feels ready to go back to his team, but he's still questioning himself, like, okay, can I actually do this or not? And by, you know, once he gets through it by the end, he's like, yes, I'm ready to go back and I feel like I can do that.
Okay.
Yep.
So similar, is there a similar character within the third period?
Yep. Or, so, okay, so kind it's of, he's kind same of, character. Okay. Yep. Right. Hits the lead. His name is Mike Olsky, and that's who we're following in Olsky. Okay. And then that is also the main character, Mike Olsky, in the third period. Okay. And that's who we follow. And he has this, you know, it's the same, you know, it's his same story of he's an aging hockey player who becomes injured. And then he has to battle back from that and some personal issues that he has to come back with his team to win the ultimate hardware at the end of the season.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So filming some of the scenes for Olsky,
mm-hmm.
I assume there were some challenges being in an ice rink.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So people always are like, God, I mean, filming in an ice rink can't be easy. And it's like, yeah, it's really not. It's not at all. So the biggest issue with anything, and I think you've taken some film classes, so you'll relate to this, is lighting.
Yes.
I mean, you know, your camera lens is like, that's your other actor, that's your other crew member. And in order for it to work properly, it has to have enough light to actually capture the picture. And so lighting is by far key to everything. Well, lighting an ice rink, it's like you have to have a lot of light for that.
Is there also the reflection from the ice itself, or no?
No, that's not a problem, okay, really.
That's the first thing that popped in my head, is that,
yeah,
you know, because being at a rink, you can see sometimes that there's a reflection often, mm-hmm, you know, especially depending on your angle, especially at certain parts of the rink. So yeah, that was the first thing that popped in my head, was it's got to be the shine and the sheen of the ice is causing havoc with your lens and your aperture and all that jazz.
Yeah, no, you would think, but no. Ice is not as reflective as it is opaque. So it's very, okay, like you can't really,
okay,
there's not a lot coming back at you from the ice itself. The good thing about ice, right, is that it's white. And white is reflective in the sense that, I mean, just think about like when you're out in the sun, if somebody's, mm-hmm, wearing black versus if they're wearing white, I mean, mm-hmm, the light is going to reflect off of a white surface. That is helpful when you're filming.
Well, so it's a good thing.
It's there a good go. Thing. Right. You know, the color of the ice, the fact that it's white is, yeah, helpful, because, yeah, it does help reflect back any light that happens to be in the rink. But for us, you know, we were filming at the Chiller. The Chiller has been a partner with us for, mm-hmm, the short film and now for the feature film. Jeremy Rogers, he's amazing. They let us shoot there after hours. So the first thing is that, like, ice time is hard to get.
You're preaching to the choir.
Exactly,
on that one.
Right? Yes. So, like, and any hockey player who listens will understand, like, the biggest, you know, roadblock to you playing is getting an actual rink. Like, ice time is tough.
Yes, because everybody that has to get up in the morning loves to play a game at 10:45 at,
yes,
night,
they do,
or 11:15, mm-hmm, and then have to get up at 5:30 in the
pretty
morning
much,
to go to work.
Yeah. It's
fantastic.
Everybody's dream. Yeah, yeah, that's a hockey player's dream. Yes, I would love to play at midnight. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Please let me do that. So, you know, the first thing was, it's like, well, we couldn't get ice time, mm-hmm, until after everybody left, because we needed it to be quiet, right? We needed that set shut down. So he was like, sure, you can use it. You have to shoot overnight. So.
Fantastic.
Cool. Thanks. So we were allowed to start bringing in equipment like earlier in the evening, but, you know, we didn't start filming until like 11 o'clock at night. So that was number one. We shot overnight, and that's, you know, I mean, if you have to do it, you have to do it, but it's no fun for anybody, mm-hmm, right? Everybody's tired and, you know, it's just not great. So that was number one. So ice time and like starting to film late. The second thing was, is we're shooting at the Chiller, and we could not bring in enough lights to light that hole. We couldn't do it. It was too big.
Was it the Chiller at Easton or what Chiller?
The Chiller at Easton.
Okay.
And, you know, we couldn't bring in enough lights to light that whole thing the way it needed to be lit. That just, we couldn't do it. We didn't have the budget for it. So but for the scenes that we did light the ice, like the sections that we were in, you know, those were still enormous lights and they take a lot of electricity. And we did blow fuses.
Oh my.
Because, you know, I think it happened twice. Like,
okay.
And like, so we had to figure out like, okay, we have to get these on, like we had to go talk to them, the manager that was on duty that night. And we were like, we have to be on a different circuit because we're blowing these lights. So they had to go, they had to get extension cords. They had to plug into an entire different electricity circuit because we kept blowing the lights. So, and then once they got on a different circuit, we were fine. But there was a lot of that going on.
Wow.
So in between, like, they'll tell you every time that you have to move the camera, it's like an hour or 2 hours because you have to reset mm-hmm. the set. Mm-hmm. You have to reset the lights. And they were huge lights. So that was like the lighting issue. That was the biggest thing for us.
Temperature, not a problem either? Like temperature didn't
cold.
Play havoc with the equipment or anything?
Not with
either?
The equipment. The okay. equipment was fine.
The humans
were like, I am freezing right now. Like we had to keep sending people out. Like they had to go. And also, you know, hockey is an exhausting sport
mm-hmm.
and you have to do multiple takes usually. And so, you know, the guys were getting tired and, mm-hmm. And again, you know, hockey is truly a skilled sport. This isn't like you just pick up a ball and like go shoot it on the court or you take a football and pass it down a field. You know, the people who actually were on the ice, they have to be able to skate. So we had to have real hockey players, and that's tough. And like,
well, but I do have a note though that one of your stars had never played before, right? Had never been on
Aaron
skate.
Aaron,
yeah,
was the lead for Olski, and he was. And we literally were like, we're gonna shoot this in 2 weeks, so we need you to be.
Well, my tip, my hat's off to him because
yeah.
I mean that's incredibly hard to do. Did mm-hmm. he have like a trainer?
He had somebody,
okay.
yes, who
right. Could
who
work with him.
Yes,
right.
Stephen Lucan, who is local, and he plays hockey, and he like worked with him for just
okay.
a couple of days, like a couple of hours on the ice. Just and we were very specific. So what we did was we shot and we edited in a way that we knew
mm-hmm.
he could at least look. Like
the part, yeah.
The part.
Yeah.
We knew if we had any footage of him trying to skate whatsoever, it would be done. So what we told Steven when he was working with him, we're like, listen, all we need for him to do is be able to stand on the ice and look like a hockey player. And we just need him to be able to get on the ice and off the ice. That's it. That's all you got to teach him. Everything else we will edit. Like, and we got a body double. So we shot.
Okay.
So that was helpful, not having lights, because we shot, you know, with a darkened
mm-hmm.
Arena, and we had his body double do all of the shots that are supposed to be him.
Where'd you find the other players at? Were they just guys from beer leagues that
answered
the call,
right?
Or
no.
Whatnot,
Jeremy Browning was Aaron's body double, and Jeremy
okay.
He's like a AAA Blue Jackets coach. Like he
okay.
he actually knows how he can skate. He can
okay.
play. And he did a beautiful job, and he's the same height and has sort of a similar like look as Aaron. So they could be brothers. But the hockey players who actually skated, they're all guys who have like played. They played either in like high school, college, like
mm-hmm.
at all those levels. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, you actually have some of the pros helping you out too.
We do.
You have
yes.
Dan Hynote, mm-hmm. Sean Pronger, and RJ Umberger.
RJ Umby is, yep.
Yeah, who's helping you out. What are their roles with the project, the third period?
Yeah, so, well, so. I always tell people, I'm pretty honest about it because I think it's important is like, I covered the team.
Okay.
I covered them for 5 seasons. So I know the game from that perspective as like a media person. And, you know, I know them from like the media in the locker room. But I never traveled with the team. I didn't travel with them. And I'm not a guy. And so I've never played NHL hockey. I can't even skate. I've tried. And I actually
okay.
tried to play hockey also because it was important to me, like as a reporter, like I should probably at least try this.
Okay.
And like as I was covering the team, I was like, I should at least try this so I understand them better. And, you know, once you try and you fail pretty handily, which I did, you have such a new respect for the sport. But yeah, so the thing of it is like I don't know those things. And I also don't know what happens like when they leave the media rooms and they go into like their private areas. I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know what they're doing. I can guess. I have a pretty good idea. I've heard stories, but like for me.
I was
going
to say, I have a comic book from Dom Riggio you could read.
I know.
And trust me, it's eye-opening.
Oh, it is. There's way more going on back there than
there's
you imagine.
There's some weird folks that are involved in hockey, but nonetheless.
Well, characters. I mean, hockey has got, I prefer to call them characters. They really do have like some interesting folks. But you know, they're also like, right, it's like they're coming from all different cultures and nationalities.
Sure.
So you have all this, like, so it's really interesting. But the point of that is like, I knew I need to have the guy, I need to have the guys mm-hmm. that are behind the scenes, and they need to weigh in on this so that we make sure that we're telling it accurately. Like the last thing you want is someone walking out of your theater going, that would never happen.
Yeah.
Like,
right,
and
right.
also that dude's holding a stick wrong. And also he's wearing the wrong, like, you know, like
yes,
that kind of
right.
critique. Like, you want to have that right so that they can just enjoy the story and not be critiquing like small technical things. So I started with the script. So I actually had Gordy Hoffman, who is, he won the Walt, I can never remember. It's the Sundance Writing Award. He won. His brother was Philip Seymour Hoffman, who passed away.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Gordy is just, he's a wonderful screenwriter. And he runs the Blue Cat Screenplay Contest. And he was my first consultant on the script. So he helped me with the story, right, and sort of laying it out. And so he was the consultant for that. But for the authenticity of the sport, I had Dan, I called Dan Hino, and Dan and I covered when he was the coach there, mm-hmm. and he and I stayed friends, and he came on as a consultant, and he worked with me on the script.
Okay.
From the sense of like, okay, so behind the scenes, this is not what would like this, and he would ask me, well, what do you want? And I would say, well, this is what the character is trying to accomplish in this scene. And he was like, okay, well, here's the hockey action that backs that up. So we kind of worked that way.
Okay, gotcha.
Because like, and so he really helped just sort of make certain scenes like feel more authentic mm-hmm. and make mm-hmm. sure the actions were correct. And then, so Dan works for USA Hockey now, and he's in Michigan. So it's hard for him to like be a part of everything, especially when he's in season. So we're like, okay, we probably need to bring on a couple more consultants mm-hmm. who can be a little more involved, especially locally. And, RJ Umberger is very good friends with Chris Olsgaard, who played Chris,
yeah. okay.
played for Ohio State.
Yes.
So did RJ.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris and Alex Lippincott, who also played for OSU Hockey, they're good friends. So they came on board as background skaters for the film. And when they did, Chris and RJ got to talking. And so RJ was like, hey, maybe I want to be a part of this. And so RJ and I started talking, and I'm like, it would be great to have you locally as a consultant. That would like be wonderful. So he came on. So and Sean Pronger came on as well, because I love his book Journeyman. If you ever read it, have you ever read it?
I have never read it.
It's a good book. I highly recommend it if you want a good laugh.
Okay.
Sean's just such a cool guy. Like, he's so funny. And his book is funny too. So they came on to sort of help with those pieces as well. And then in September, we had some of our actors here, and we did some charity events. And part of that day was we worked on choreography, because we wanted to understand from a script perspective, are we doing this right? And mm-hmm. I'm glad we did, because there were some things that we were like, oh, we need this part, because if it was this, then. So we did a lot of that. So RJ and Sean are working really heavily on like the choreography of things.
So for like listeners at home, in other words, like if a play happens and mm-hmm. X happens,
mm-hmm.
and if you don't film it correctly in the sequence that Y would be next and Z would be next, then it doesn't have that authenticity
exactly.
to it.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly
gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
And like there's a hit that happens right in the beginning of the film. And for me, I was like, what is this actual hit? Like, you really have to put, like, you have
sure.
to pay attention
yeah.
to the, like, first of all, the injury is this. So if this is the injury, what does the hit look like?
Mm-hmm.
So what is it, and mm-hmm. how would it be dirty? Like you're trying to figure out like, what does that look like? And then, you know, so we're sitting there and we're like, okay, so the action has to be this. We need for this character to do this because we want to accomplish this story goal. So then RJ will look at it and Sean will look at it and they'll be like, okay, well, for that to happen and for that play to unfold, you have to do this, or you're going to have to change this play because it wouldn't unfold like
gotcha.
That.
Gotcha.
Very technical. Very, very technical.
Gotcha. So the local hockey community has really been very, very supportive of the project.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about some of those folks that have helped out. But How has it been received by other hockey communities? Have you heard from other folks, say, in the New England area or the Pennsylvania area or the New York area that are, you know, hockey hotbeds? Mm-hmm. Have they caught wind of this? Or
have you
gotten some feedback from them?
I get feedback from guys who want to be in the movie, hockey players. Like, that's the main feedback I get. Like, I get emails every day from across the country of, like, people who are like, I play hockey. Like,
what about big names? Do you ever get one you're like, oh my God, Wayne Gretzky emailed me?
Not yet. I mean, I think it's like, it's super important to like keep perspective. Like, it's a cool big thing for Columbus. It's new and it's grassroots, mm-hmm. you know, here. But, you know, in the outside world, it's like, well, who's in it? Like, what celebrities? Yeah. Like, what, you know, right. what I mean? So it's not, you can't just, everybody has an idea for a movie. Like, there's, you know, everybody, sure. everybody's working on a film somewhere, right? Like, we're all doing it. So it's, you know, I think it starts to mean more to people whenever, like, you have more meaningful actors or celebrities or, you know, people mm-hmm. tied to the project as well. Like, it definitely, people were more interested, you know, they want to talk more about it. Like, once, like, Dan is involved and RJ is involved and they're trying to move things forward, Sean is involved, they want to know a little bit more about it. But I do mostly get from all the communities just hockey players who are like, I really want to be involved. And then I do get some of some people who play at the minors or the pro levels mm-hmm. who are like, hey, what are you doing? Like, how can I be a part of it? And they'll read the script or they'll talk about it and they're like, we love this. So the feedback that I do get from folks who are actual like pros, whether they're minor league or NHL level, is they usually love the script and they read it. And the number
one... And that's going to make you feel good. I mean, not to interrupt.
It does feel good. Yeah. It feels great. And the number one thing that almost all of them say, which to me is like music to my ears, is almost the immediate feedback is, I feel like I've lived this. Mm. Like, I feel like...
The frustration, the emotion of it and whatnot.
The frustration, the emotion, but also the characters. Like, they're like, I know that guy. Like, that's the thing I hear the most is like, I know that guy. Like, that guy that I read, I've hung out with that guy in the locker room. Mm-hmm. Like, so the characters to them are very familiar. So I love that. That's very comforting.
As I mentioned, you have a lot of support. You mentioned the Chiller has been supportive. Mm-hmm. Giant Eagle has been supportive.
Yeah,
talk huge. About the support that the community has given you. And there's many others. I just mentioned those two right
off
the top
like
of my
right
head.
Off the top, right? Like, so it's really interesting because the primary support that we're getting right now is from the business community, mm-hmm. Which is, it's not that it's surprising. It's more like it's just... It's very appreciated and very like, oh, so they get it. Because business owners, right, they're by inherently their nature, they're entrepreneurs, so they're visionary. And so just that fact alone, that's, I think, why we're getting so much support from the business community, because they're like, this is cool and it's so good for mm-hmm. Columbus and Central mm-hmm. Ohio. And they see that and they want to be a part of mm-hmm. that. And I love that. And because we're really trying to build the film industry in Columbus and we're trying to do it ground up, right? Mm-hmm. Grassroots. And that's, mm-hmm. that can be tough. So, Live Technologies is our biggest partner right now. And, they have been tremendous and they're so involved and invested in, you know, we're shooting a lot of things there and they'll be like doing a lot of ice stuff for us, like the ice shows and the ice, the intros when the teams come on the ice and stuff, they'll do all of that. And then, like you said, Giant Eagle has been just a huge, huge, they're our official catering partner. The Chiller is hugely involved. Studio 35 Cinema Draft House, indie film here in Columbus and there in Clintonville, and they own the Grand View Theater as well. And I mean, I think though, like the number one person that I always love to point out is that Michael Darr. So Michael Darr owns Arbor Arena and Three-Legged Mare.
Okay.
Okay. And so Michael Darr is a small business owner, and hockey is like his business. So if you've never been to the R Bar, you should know.
It's pretty much like just being in a hockey locker room.
And, more or less. You know. There's a penalty box area.
Yes,
in there,
exactly.
Like, I mean,
yeah.
This guy loves hockey, and he's right by Nationwide Arena. And so his business is hockey. So mm-hmm. when hockey is in season, that's when his business is booming, you know, and he supports all the other sports as well.
Sure.
The Columbus Crew and mm-hmm. Ohio State football, of course, you know, he does. But, you know, he's kind of known as like the hockey bar here in Columbus. He's a small business owner, and he, you know, he came in as like a business partner. He bought in as an ad, you know, person, ad partner from a business perspective. And like, to me, that is so huge because, you know, that's a lot. It's an investment that you just look at it and you're like, this is so great. And you're local and that's mm-hmm. amazing. And you love the sport so much that you're going to, you know, make this investment. And so, you know, it's just like, I'm humbled by that. I feel completely like humbled by any business who's like, I feel so invested in this that I want to be a part of it. So to all of them, I mean, we're just grateful. I'm grateful and I appreciate that support.
So you're set to begin filming the third period in 2019, right?
So the plan is to film it in 2019.
Okay.
The plan. So we're in development right now. And I think this is where I think people get a little, like, I don't think they understand necessarily, like, the process of making a movie.
Right, yeah.
It's so long. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think people realize how long of a process it can be. And it's all front end. Like, the actual making of the movie production itself is, like, I don't know, depending on the movie, like 4 weeks to 4 months. Like, that's it. It's not like this long.
But
unless it's the Matrix, right?
Yeah,
like the Matrix is shot for like 2 years straight or something, like in Australia. Like, okay. But that's the Matrix. Like,
right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But for the most part, most films shoot like 4 weeks to 4 months. I mean, that's the shortest part. So production takes the least amount of time. The most amount of time is development and pre-production.
Mm-hmm.
And development can take years, because that's where you're like, you're figuring out who your cast is, you're finding your locations, where do we want to shoot, you're getting tax credits, you're talking to people about investing and all. It's so long. It takes such a long time. We're in that right now. So we've been in it for about 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working on development for 18 months, and we've partnered up with Ohio Film Group. And Len Hartman is producing through Lenji Productions, but their sister company. So Lenji Productions and Ohio Film Group. And Ohio Film Group is going to do the post production. And then Len Hartman is going to do the producing part of it. So they'll actually be in charge of pre-production and physical production. But he and I are partnering in the beginning to do the development piece. So right now we're working on financing the film. And getting, you know, a celebrity involved with it. And those two things
take up a lot of time.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah. It's so much. It's just a lot of, like, it's a lot of footwork and phone calls and meetings.
Yeah.
And it's all that part mm-hmm. of it. And it just takes, you know, anytime you're dealing with money or big money, it's going to take a little while to kind of get through that piece. But, you know, we do have, fortunately, a lot of people who are really interested in it and invested in it. But once we kind of get through that part, then we'll actually set the actual dates for it. But tentatively, it's like June 3rd through July 14th. So it's summertime. Next year is the plan right now.
There you go.
Yep.
And we'll talk here towards the end of our chat as to where folks can follow all of the updates and whatnot for the project.
Yep.
But let's talk a little bit more about just yourself. You have a background in fine arts, right? As well as journalism, broadcasting, and whatnot.
Yeah.
And is that how you ended up covering the Blue Jackets? Was your journalism? Like, how did you fall into that?
I know,
that
right?
Job?
How did that happen?
Like, yeah. No, I'm just, I'm curious.
Whoa.
Like, you know.
Yeah, so it's, to be honest, when I was 18, I wanted to run away to LA and be an actress.
Okay.
I really did. And I told my mom my plan, and she was like, no, like hard pass.
No.
We're not doing that. Like, no, absolutely not. She was just like,
there was no even like, you can go to college first. It was just like flat out no.
No, it was like, oh, okay. No. No. And end of conversation. Now let's talk about your real education, quote unquote, and a real job, quote unquote. So, I mean, I have always had sort of the dramatic, cinematic storytelling in my blood. That's it's always been something I wanted to do. And so I kind of did it on a small scale in Columbus. I worked as like a model and an actress, and like I did like a regional ad. And I mean, it only took a couple of those things for me to be like, no, no, I do not like, I didn't love being in front of the camera for that kind of stuff. I found out later I loved being in front of the camera for like, if it was just me talking, like, and me covering the team was great. But so there's my parents are like, okay, find a real job. And so the job that let me be a storyteller and get paid for it in the market that we're in Ohio, was journalism.
Okay.
That's how I got into it.
Gotcha. And you worked for a newspaper for a while first, right?
Oh, yeah. And Cambridge. I had to like, Cambridge was my first job. And I had like, I didn't just get that job, but I interviewed for a general assignment reporter job. And, I did not get it. Some other guy got it. And I was like, okay, well, my dream is not crushed. I am going to keep trying. I was like, so what can I do? And they were like, I don't know, you can be a stringer. So I started out as a stringer, and it was right before everything transitioned to digital. So I worked with film, and I was developing film for the newspaper.
Really?
Like, And at the same time as when they transitioned to digital. So I was part of that, like going from film to digital. But so I worked as a stringer for like a year, and then they fired that guy, and then they hired me because they were like, well, we have a freelance story. We're out of reporters. Can you just get it done? And I wrote it. It was supposed to be like an inside the paper, like 200 word thing. And I came back and I wrote it, and they were like, seriously, they're like, this is a cover story. And I ended up, it was a cover story on the business section.
Cool.
It was about an apple orchard. I remember that. That was my in.
Well, of course, because I've
I know
Cambridge, Ohio.
Listen, so you know how important orchards are. Yeah, no, I mean it's pretty like, but it was a
I mean, now all my listeners in Cambridge are like, screw you, we are done listening to this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was the Daily Jeffersonian, and it was a big deal because the big deal about it was like it had always been a family owned orchard, and there was a debate. Yeah, it was something like there was a debate about waxing the apples. It was a big deal because it was like money and corporate, and it was like a whole thing. So anyway, I got that, and then I got the job, and I worked there for a while, and I just sort of stayed in it. And then I ended up doing investigative reporting, which I don't think people realize that I did that. Like, I was actually an investigative reporter. I brought down like a couple of officials and did some like murder and crime stories. And like, so I
am
was
I safe being
pretty,
in this room with you?
I know. I mean, you might be a little worried about that.
Some enemies, maybe.
I did. And there was some shady stuff that I was really like, so here's the thing. There was enough shadiness with what I was doing, not in terms of the work that I was doing, but like in terms of, I felt like my safety was compromised, and I had my daughter. And so I was like, you know, I think I should probably start covering some nice things where people are going to, you know, be nice to me and not want to like hurt me. So let's just switch fields. So I came to Columbus and I started doing some like more feature stuff. And then the job opened up at the other paper, and I was doing cops in courts. But when I got in, I was like, who are these Blue Jackets? I didn't even know. Like, I really didn't know.
So you weren't a hockey fan prior to this at all?
I grew up in southeastern Ohio, and I tell people this all the time. Like, it was football Friday nights. Like, it was either football or basketball. Right. That's what you get in southern Ohio. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. So I didn't grow up a hockey fan. I'd only seen one game ever, just sort of like somebody forced me to go because we were there to like pick somebody up or something. And I wasn't even watching the game. I was talking. And so I was just like, what is this Blue Jackets thing? And my editor's like, really? Seriously? And I'm like, I just moved to Columbus like a year ago. I don't know. So he was like, I was like, well, why aren't we covering it? It's a pro hockey team. And he was like, well, the guy who covered it, he's not here anymore. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll go to a game. Sure. I went and I just like fell.
This was in the early years, like the, when
no,
the team was here?
This was like, this was 2000 and like, seven,
okay,
eight, right. Something like that. It was right before we made the playoffs. For the first time.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And we got beat in four games.
Yeah. It was still kind of the dark ages.
It was the dark ages.
Okay.
All
right. That's where I was.
It was. It was right after Doug McLean left, too.
Oh, okay.
And like,
let's see.
Who came in right after
Would
Doug?
Would that be Gallant? Gerald Gallant? No.
No, it was.
He was later.
I can see his face. I can't remember.
Scott Arneil?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was there with Arneil. The coach was Hitchcock when I came in.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It was Hitchcock. Okay. And then gotcha. It was Arneil.
Arneil.
Yeah. Okay. And then it was Todd Richards.
Yes.
And they were all great. Hitchcock was amazing. Mm-hmm. He was so nice to me. Because you have to remember, I didn't know anything about hockey. I went in as a rookie. I'm so embarrassed. The first question I ever asked of an NHL player in the locker room, like, it was bad.
Okay.
I literally asked him, do you ever fall on the ice?
Oh.
I was horrible. That face, whoops. Exactly. That voice, whoops. That face. Mm. And lucky for me, it was Mike Commodore. And so anybody who knows Mike knows that, like, you know, Commie is pretty much just like,
yeah.
Really? And he just laughed it off. And okay, like, and yeah. Then he legitimately
that's,
answered
that's
my
question.
That's
the one guy that you lucked out on that one.
I lucked out. I am so glad that I did not ask, like, Rick Nash that question.
Right.
That would have been real bad. Real bad.
Yeah.
But they all knew. I told him really honestly, because I was doing a primer. Okay. For the season and I did a primer for the playoffs and I was just like, listen, I'm doing a primer because I don't know anything. And so I'm a rookie. And he was like, all right, no problem. So
okay.
He knew, but Hitchcock knew that too. And he would sit with me after press conferences and I would ask him like more specific things. And he was really nice about teaching
that's cool.
Some of the games.
That's
too.
Excellent.
Hitchcock was amazing. And I appreciated that. So, but yeah, I like taught myself. I read every book. I read JD's book. Hockey for Dummies. He did Hockey for Dummies. I read everything and I learned the game and I studied it. And that's how I kind of got into it and ended up winning I was second place like for best sports writer in the state of Ohio.
Really?
In our circulation size. Yeah.
Oh.
So I didn't mess
congrats.
Around, man. I worked my way all the way
there
up and I just kept like, and it's funny too, because when you cover the team, you have the press section up above the ice that's watching. And when you're first there and you're like nobody and nobody knows who you are, they put you like all the way on the right side of the the press. So you're like single game pass, right, in the media. But then like the more that they know you, the further left that you go.
Wow, this is something like I would expect out of like Congress.
Yeah, I know, right?
I mean? Like, oh,
I know.
Oh, the rookie, you sit in the back of the press conference.
You're in the back of the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like the further to the left I kept going, I felt like, yes, I'm finally. And so by the time I left, I was like, I was up by where everybody else was.
I was unaware that such, what's the word I'm looking
hierarchy
for? Hierarchy.
Existed.
Thank you. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
It does. It certainly does. Like on the ice and in the ice press boxes as well. So
gotcha.
I learned and I studied and that's how I ended up there. And I loved my time there. It was amazing.
You are writing a Southern Gothic novel called Paper Wasp. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I started...
Are you still doing that as you're working on the film as well?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So you're balancing both things.
I mean, if any time I get to tell a story, I don't care the way it is, I'm going to sit down and tell this. I love to write. I love to be directing. I love anything to do with telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm getting my master's, my MFA, my master's degree in creative writing. Because I really think that in literary fiction, you know, so many movies are based off of books.
Yeah.
And literary fiction gives you like this beautiful way to be inside the character's head and really talk, you know, tell their story on such a deep level that really then when you do the movie, you have explored the character so thoroughly in the pages that you can just bring them to life on screen, right? Because they're two different types of writing. They're two different types of mediums, but they're all about storytelling. So that's why I went with an MFA in creative writing, because I feel like if I can master telling the story, you know, really honing in on character, then it's always going to translate and it can come across in film. And then I learned the technical aspect of film as well. But as part of that, you know, I had this short story that I had started. It was like a short story collection, like Tales from the Crypt. Do you remember Tales from the Crypt?
I do.
Oh, my God.
I never watched it, but I know.
Oh, yes.
I never watched it. Sorry.
I was obsessed with Tales from the Crypt and also like The Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone now.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
I watched many episodes of The Twilight Zone.
Did you see The Twilight Zone where they were living in this house and there was this goo coming into their house? Do you remember this episode?
No, I don't.
Yes. And it ends up like at the very end, they pan out and it's a dollhouse that a candy bar is melting in.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yes, I'm familiar with that one. I don't think I've ever seen it, but I'm aware of it from some other reference. Okay, that makes sense. That rings a bell.
I remember watching that, and I was like, what is this crazy? Like, I was so scared for them, and they pull out, and I'm like, what? It's a chocolate bar in a doll house? Like, what's crazy? Like, messing with your mind. Damn you, yes. So I loved all that stuff, and I started writing this thing about this guy who goes, you know, into the forest and like, what does he encounter there? Mm-hmm. And that ended up being the basis for Paper Wasps. Well, so I'm working on, though it ends up being like, by the time you graduate, your thesis is like, you should have a novel like written. So I wrote it.
Okay.
And then you caught me right when this whole thing changed. I literally just talked to my professor, and like it ends up that really I was telling two stories in one. So Paper Wasps, I pulled out, and I like he gave me feedback, and I sat down, and in 3.5 hours, I hammered out an entire screenplay, the first draft of a screenplay.
Oh.
And so the book became the screenplay, Paper Wasps.
Okay.
And now it's that whole thing. And then separate from that is now this other story of like the same janitor story, but it's more action adventure and focused on his angle.
Does it have a title?
It's untitled currently, but that's my novel. So hopefully that's my first novel, and Paper Wasps separated out into a movie.
There you go.
Crazy how that happens.
Hey. Happy accident, maybe?
Happy accident. Okay. I would. I was struggling as a writer with that because mm-hmm. I knew that I was trying to intertwine two stories. I could feel that I had two protagonists, but I wasn't sure how to break them apart.
Mm-hmm.
And in his feedback, I was like, but that's writing for you. That's storytelling. Yeah.
You have your own production company too.
Yeah.
11-1 Productions.
I do.
Mm-hmm. So why'd you start a production company?
I know. Why did I do that? Crazy.
Wow, John, what a way to be a jerk with that question.
why'd you do that? It's so
probably the least eloquent question I've asked in a very long time. Why'd you do that?
What the hell? What'd you do that for? So that's a good question. I find myself to be right and left brained. So while I feel like I'm creative and I love to write and tell mm-hmm. stories, I'm also am like really analytical, and I love like business. I truly love producing and the business side, like the development side mm-hmm. of like the movie business, like the business. I love that stuff. I had no idea that I love that stuff until I started doing it. So to me, what ended up happening was like, okay, well, I want to be able to tell my stories. Who's going to, you know, I'm an unknown in Columbus, Ohio. How am I going to get people to hear it?
Right.
Like this script, Olsky, like, correct. I need to sell it. How am I going to do that? And so it was like, okay, well, I'm going to start my own production company initially just because I want to have a place to push my mm-hmm. own content through, right? Stuff that I'm writing that I think is a great story to tell. Because I do trust my voice, right? So I was like, well, this is a great avenue for that. But once I got through it and I did like one or two things and, you know, started doing that, I was like, this is a bigger opportunity than like, I don't need to just tell my stories. There are a lot of people mm-hmm. with a lot of great voices. And that's why I loved journalism, because I loved giving a voice mm-hmm. to other people. In particular, I loved giving a voice to victims, like people who didn't have, being a journalist is like putting a megaphone to a victim's mouth and giving them an opportunity to tell their story. And I thought, well, I can do that same thing with my production company
mm-hmm.
and I can find new voices and I can give people an opportunity to direct or write. And in particular, because I'm a woman, you know, the film industry is notoriously underserved from a female perspective. It's just, we're underrepresented, and so are minorities.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So it's like, well, I can do something about that. And that's kind of always been like, I always have felt like through the written word and through stories, you can affect change. Like, okay, well, maybe I can't, you know, maybe I'm not a politician, and I'm not, and I couldn't play that game, and I can't change laws. No, but I can tell a story mm-hmm. and I can tell someone else's story, and I can give them a voice.
Do you think that that's changing though? That the having the representation of women and minorities.
Well, I mean that's look at changing, the midterm, mid, look at the midterm right. elections, right?
Sure.
Like that's the biggest, that was the biggest voting in of women
mm-hmm.
that we have seen in history, right? Like more women took seats
in Congress or governorships or whatever.
Than they have seen in any election. So slowly but surely, women are starting to be in positions of power where they can make decisions. But for me, it was like, but that's not who I am. I'm not a politician, but I can tell a good story and I can put a vehicle in someone else's hand. Like I can provide the avenue for them to tell their story and have other good writers. And so like I purchased recently a script from Diana Craig, who's a local writer, Revenge. She has a really lovely voice and her script was fantastic. And so I'm making that. And then, you know, working with Hope Madden, she has a script coming out. And so to me, the evolution of that company is, okay, this may have started because I felt like I wanted to have a voice, but it is evolving for me to have an opportunity to give other people a voice in film and in storytelling. And so that's how and why I wanted to start my company.
You said to me when we were talking and trying to set this up that you are a big fan of comic book TV shows. as our last question, what draws you into the genre?
I love fantasy. I am obsessed with Star Wars. Okay. And like I loved Indiana Jones. Like was Indiana Jones a comic book? I'm trying to remember. I don't think.
It became one. Right. Marvel had one from the movies. Yes.
Right. So it started with, like, I'm obsessed with George Lucas because I think he's such a brilliant story creator, right? Mm-hmm. Like, those kinds of, I love all of that stuff. Superman, like, people will seriously ask me, like, what do you really want to do with your life? And I'm like, can I just be a Jedi? Like, I just want to, like, I love those worlds. Like, I love those worlds that get built. And so I love that stuff. And I, you know, my brother used to read comic books all the time. And I used to love to look at the pictures. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily read them. I didn't necessarily read what was in the text boxes, but I loved the pictures. And so... but I think what you and I talked about was like, I have a serious, unhealthy obsession to Arrow.
just be honest, it's Stephen Amell, isn't it?
I mean, Stephen Amell. Come on.
He's a handsome fellow, let's just be honest.
Come on, Stephen Amell, give me a break. That guy is like, he's attractive in a way that like, we should not be allowed to have humans that are like that attractive. He's beautiful. But I mean, there are women that are like that too, right?
Sure.
Like,
of course there are.
I mean, come on. Like Megan Fox she's ridiculously attractive. Angelina Jolie is, you know, she's kind of foxy. I mean.
Shall we agree to disagree on those two?
Okay, but you know what I'm saying, right? There are just people who are so attractive that you're like, really? That's just such an injustice to the whole human race because we can't possibly meet those standards. But yeah, no, it's not Steven. But he is a very, he's such a good actor.
Because he doesn't compass that role very well. He lives that role, so to speak.
And he doesn't like, he doesn't push it too far one way or the other. Like he just kind of, he plays it very, very well, I think. But yeah, I love that world. And
It's all based on the narrative, which we started this whole conversation off talking about how narratives are important. And there you go. It doesn't matter if you have superpowers or not.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. His character is just sort of lovely and interesting. And all of the people who support him are interesting. But like, Do you watch it?
I have watched it, yes.
Okay. So do you have an opinion about like season one and how they did the flashbacks?
Season one was fantastic.
It lasted longer than one season. Was it five seasons it went through?
I'll be very honest. The flashbacks started to get annoying.
You think they're annoying. I loved them.
I stopped after season four because I'm like, this has to stop. I'm tired of the flashbacks.
I was like waiting for the wrap up of how he ended up back on that island. Like, I love that. But do you have also an opinion on Olicity? Like, Oliver and Felicity? Like, do you have an opinion on them being together?
I was unaware that there was an Olicity.
Oh my god, there is an Olicity. I'm writing that down. They call it Olicity. And I'm just going to tell you right now that I am a fan. And there, like, if you're an Arrow fan and you are in the Arrowverse, you will have an opinion on Olicity. You're either strongly for them as a couple or strongly against them. Like, people have a lot of hatred for Olicity who actually hate that couple.
Really?
I love them. I think they're amazing together.
You know, there is one thing I will say about the comic book geek community.
Yes.
They have opinions.
Oh, yes, they do. When I love to go to the convention center when Comic Con is in town.
Uh-huh.
I mean, to...
Sure. Wizard
when
World.
They're,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the costumes and the, like, it's... It's pretty fantastic.
Wizard World is a lot of fun.
Yes.
I agree.
Do you go? Do you wear a costume?
I've been there twice, as a matter of fact. This past year and the year before with my good friend of the podcast, Brian Lau, as we've been pushing out his book, Staunch Ambition. So,
very good. So. You got another plug-in. That was another one for you, Brian.
Yep. Trust me. Brian owes me for all the plugs. I'm just kidding, Brian.
But wait, do you guys dress up when you go?
No, okay. We do not. Nope.
Are you lying right now just so you're
not?
I was just curious.
Anyways, let's wrap up here with where folks can keep tabs on you so that they know when filming is going to begin for the third period, when some of your other projects are coming out. So social medias.
You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Like, we're on all those. I don't do Snapchat. I mean, maybe at some point. If we have like a full-time marketing person, they can do. I am not a fan of. I know I'm going to offend like a lot of people, but I am just not a huge fan of Snapchat. Like, I have text messaging. That's all I'm saying.
I understand. I understand.
But the primary places are going to be Facebook for the third period.
Okay.
And
at
it's
the third
literally
period,
just yeah, yeah. It's okay. Just like at third period and or third period film, and then Instagram, same thing. Third period. I mean, that's. Where you're going to see everything. And then you can also follow my company's page, 111 Productions, on Facebook and Twitter. Anybody who's interested in like the third period film, they're going to want to follow the site specific ones on social media. But for people who are interested in like if they want to act or be crew or anything like that, 111 Productions is where you want to go.
All right, there you go. So Twitter at third period film, same as Instagram, and at the third period on Facebook. Mm-hmm. That's all you need to
know,
folks.
That's all you need to know. It's right there and you'll get all of it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Steph, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. And folks, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. So please stick around. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Steph Grieger, talking about her project, The Third Period. And as you heard us mention, there's a variety of different places where you can go to stay on top of this film project to learn about its status and whatnot. And of course, on Twitter, at Third Period Film, Third Period over on Facebook, and of course, the website for the production company, 111productions.com. All great avenues to get information about The Third Period. And with that, I think it's about time for me to remind you that indeed you can contact me. A variety of different ways. First off, you can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook page of the PVDcast, that being facebook.com/PVDcast. Or if you'd like to shoot me an email, because maybe you're a mom and pop industry or business that wants to do some advertising with the PVDcast and you don't want to limit yourself to 280 characters or whatnot. Well, you can email me, johnorlando@PVDcast.com. That's the email address that you need. And hey, you know what? Help spread the word, folks. If you want to let some folks know exactly where this podcast is at, well, let me tell you, it's available at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly. So it's available through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Spotify, Google Play, the Echo Network, Pod Paradise. Ah, heck, man, just wherever you find podcasts, I bet you're sure to find the PVDcast. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous. Stay independent.